yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, so last week we promised we'd talk about wages, and we're going to do that at the start of the show. But we also want to talk about other big news of the week, in particular, Trump's budget and deficits to the moon and the rising national debt, which over the next decade easily will exceed another $10 trillion. And what that debt increase means for the central bank, the Federal Reserve, interest rates going up, and what those rising interest rates mean for the general economy. The topic of today's show is recession 2019. How might that happen? All right, so we're going to talk about the budget-busting deficits, the debt, and the coming increase in Fed rates for projected, and what that means for the economy. And my prediction that I've been communicating here and in my writings for some months now, that the Fed will not be able to raise those rates as high as it's projecting before it completes four rate hikes, it's going to precipitate a credit crisis. Okay, so we'll explain what we mean by that. But first, topic, as I promised last week, let's say something about wages. You know, a lot of hype going on right now in the media and press that, oh, wages are rising. BS. Wages aren't rising except for a small group. But they want you to think that. That's all part of the spin. And we're going to bust that bubble here with the following. All right. First of all, what do we mean by wages? It's an important topic. There's lots of definitions of wages in the official government data. Forget any report on wages that references averages. Averages are meaningless because you've got the wealthy top end, which are getting increases in income, salaries, and even wages, which are distorting the averages and dragging it up. I'm talking maybe the top 5% of wage earners and salary earners. Oh, by the way, salary. Forget references to salary, too, because that includes managers, management, highly paid professionals, like in tech and elsewhere. If you include salary, you're going to boost the average up even more. What you got to focus on is hourly wages for production and non-supervisory workers, about 110 million of them in the U.S. economy. But even hourly wage is not accurate because their income, their earnings, weekly earnings, are a function not only of their wage rate, but a function of the hours they work. So you can tokenly raise their hourly wage, but reduce the hours that they work, and their earnings for the week will decline. So it's weekly earnings that you want to look at for non-supervisory workers, and not averages, but the median or below. But they don't report that in the media, in the press. You get the salaried averages and all the other forms of income, commissions and bonuses and so forth. That's considered average income. And they'd say that that's what the wage is. Well, it's not. Also, it's important, what source are you looking at? What government source? Is it Bureau of Labor Statistics data? Or is it from the Commerce Department? Oh, if it's from the Commerce Department, that's where labor's share of total income is calculated. And of course, it's been going down. Actually, it's going down even more than it's reported in the Commerce Department, because you may not know this, that 65% of all proprietors, in other words, small business people, their business income, right? 65% of that business income is considered wage. Yeah. It's assumed in the definitions that they pay themselves a wage, and that's 2/3 of their total profits. Business income is profits, non-corporate businesses we're talking about here, and partnerships. And of course, we know high-paid lawyers are in partnerships, and they have business income. They don't, their law firms don't have corporate profits, and they pay themselves a lot. And 65% of that is considered wage. Well, that distorts the wage, doesn't it, in labor share? Labor share has been going down, but it's going down much more than they even report. All right, so these are some of the games that are played with definitions of what actually is a wage. All right, we haven't talked about another issue. What about compensation? In other words, not their wage, their hourly wage, but how much is paid for compensation by employers to their health plans and their pension plans and other costs. If the worker's share of paying for runaway health care costs goes up, that offsets the real wage that they have. You know, they may get a 5 cent, 10 cent an hour raise, but if their compensation share for health care goes up 20 cents, well, they're going backwards. And the same thing for pensions. Workers are having to put more in their pensions per hour or whatever. And that's not calculated, you see. Compensation is even more accurate than wage, which is more accurate than salary, et cetera, and averages and medians. Well, we're not through yet. What about the adjustment for inflation? That's the real wage or the real compensation. That's even more accurate. Or seasonal adjustments. You know, people get more raises, quote, in the fourth quarter when they get, quote, bonuses, lump sum payments that go into the calculation. So it looks like things go up in the fourth quarter rather than the first quarter of the year. So we got to look at real earnings, and not for all employees, not for managers and highly paid professionals, and not averages, but medians. And we have to adjust for inflation and adjust for seasonality and adjust for declines in hours of work. Well, what do we come up with when we do all those adjustments and considerations? So you get what's really happening to wages, real wages, real disposable income for the working class, the 110, 20 million people out of the 160 million in the U.S. labor force. What do we get? Well, we just had data come out here from the Labor Department for real average hourly earnings for all employees. So it's biased upward because it's an average and it's all employees, managers, and so forth. Okay, but let's look at that. Let's take that figure itself, even though we know it's overestimated. And what do we get here? Well, from January 2017 to January 2018, adjusted for inflation and seasonality and hours, but not averages, okay, but some adjustments here. How much of an increase in hourly earnings do we have for workers? No, actually, it's not workers. It's all employees, because that's not adjusted out. Well, even all employees, the top end, who got their increases, what do we end up with? 4 tenths of 1% increase in average hourly earnings for all employees over the past year. 0.4%. Now, if we adjust that for averages and we look at median or below, roughly we would get about 0.3% increase in wages. Now, if the average wage, hourly wage for production non-supervisory workers is about $22 an hour, well, 0.3 of $22 an hour will get you what? About 8 cents an hour. They got an 8 cents an hour increase on average. That's about $3.20 a week. $3.20 raise a week over the past year. 8 cents an hour. But we still need to adjust that further, you see, because that's full-time work, 40 hours a week. But one-third of the workforce is either unemployed or contingent. In other words, part-time, temp, contract, on-call, right? And they make about half of what full-time workers get. So, they would get maybe 1.5 cent an hour instead of 3 cents. I mean, 4 cents an hour a year raised, about $80 a year. So if we weighted properly the weight of one-third of this contingent and unemployed into the whole picture here, the weighted, we'd get about maybe $120 a year increase. That's closer to $2 a week raise. And you know what? The trend is downward. In the last six months, the data show that for each month, the change in the real wage, for all employees, by the way, once again, has been either zero, no change in the month, or negative. Two of the months, no change. Three of the months, negative, including the last month, January. So five out of the last 6 months, it's a downward trend in wages. So where is all this hype coming from? There's no wage increase except for a small sliver of people at the top of the workforce. Even according to their own data, the government's own data, real wages in the sense of hourly earnings, hourly earnings, because hours of work are declining, real wages in terms of hourly earnings for median workers, adjusted for inflation, adjusted for weighted averages here, given contingent labor, one-third of the workforce, it's pennies per hour, somewhere between 4 and 8 cents an hour raise. Whoopee! Oh, wages are running away. And the trend is downward. Okay. That's my take on all this hype about wages are rising. And also, it translates into, inflation is rising. Inflation rising, that means the Federal Reserve has to continue raising interest rates to do something with inflation. It hadn't had anything to do with inflation for 9 years, Fed rate hikes or Fed rate policies. They say that that's their target, but that's another big lie. It's not nothing to do with target. All the Fed pumping of trillions of dollars into the banks and into the corporate America has nothing to do with trying to get inflation going. Okay, so in other words, the economy is getting overheated. The economy is not overheated. You got a little false bump in business investment going on, the Trump bump, right? And that's going to dissipate because consumption will not sustain it. Consumption. And that was what households have been spending. What have they been spending? Well, on with what have they been spending? If wages aren't rising, wage income isn't rising for most, 80% of the labor force is not rising. Well, where's the spending coming from? Well, it's coming from, you know, the top 10% in managers and the other, that other 30 million that are making a lot of money, not only in salary increases, but in the stock market and the bond market and other markets. That's where they're making their big killing. Yeah. So, you know, where's the money coming from? Well, the Fed now is in the process of raising interest rates, you know, because we got so-called inflation and wages driving inflation. Of course, wages aren't driving inflation, and inflation itself is not rising due to real economic activity. In other words, real growth driving up the price of goods and services. No, look at the inflation. What's the composition of the inflation? We just, you know, debunked the whole idea of the composition of wage increases. What's the competition composition of inflation, if you look at inflation? Well, a lot of it has to do with escalating housing costs, mostly rents. That's a problem. Import prices, imported goods, because the dollar is falling. Energy cost, the cost of crude oil a bit here, and that's being reflected at the pump. Other costs, insurance costs, health insurance costs, because the ACA Obamacare has been debilitated here, and insurance companies are raising their costs of premiums, and prescription drugs are still going through the roof. Trump says he's going to do something about it. He's not going to do a damn thing about it. And daily, we get reports of life-important prescription drugs going up hundreds and thousands of percent here as they continue gouging us. They're not going to do anything about runaway drug problems, not lobbying of any industry in the country. Anymore, they're going to do anything about all the killings of kids in high school with guns. They're not going to do anything about that. They get up there, they talk. Trump runs down to Florida, does his little speech. Oh, we're going to do something, and nothing happens. Nothing happens, right? And people hold their vigils, and the local politicians come out and give their same old speech, same old tired speeches, and nothing happens. Nothing happens because they get a lot of money from the NRA, and they're not going to aggravate the NRA and not get the money for their campaigns, you see, their reelection. All they care about, these politicians, is getting reelected. They don't give a damn about people. And the lies are coming fast and furious here, all around, from all sources. All right, so let's move on to the budget deficit, where there's more lies going on, and the tax cuts, which we've been talking about. All right, so a little ABCs of federal government debt and budget. Dig deeper into that particular topic. All right, the national debt, $20 trillion. It was $4 trillion back in 2000. It's risen $16 trillion. The Trump tax cuts and the Trump budget are going to raise that over the next decade $10 to $12 trillion more. So in 10 years, minimum, we're going to have a $30 trillion national debt, or a $32, $33 trillion, it could be. Now, why is that national debt important? Because the government's going to have to borrow money to pay for the deficits every year. And the deficits are going up to $1 trillion or more. Last year's deficit was $666 billion. It's going to hit $1 trillion in 2018-19, at least. Well, even the Congressional Budget Office estimates $918 billion deficit. J.P. Morgan Chase estimates $1.2 trillion. is going to be the 2018-19 deficit debt. What that means is that there's not enough tax revenue to pay for the spending, you see. So that's what the deficit is. And when you accumulate deficits every year, that becomes $1 trillion plus deficits as long as the eye can see for coming years because of the massive tax cuts and the almost as massive increase in military spending and other corporate subsidies that's in the Trump budget. It's handout time. It's been going on, handout politicians handing out trillions of dollars to corporations and wealthy investors in the wealthiest 1%. How do you think we got from $4 trillion debt in 2000 to today, $20 trillion? Well, 60% of the deficits, at least, is due to falling tax revenues. Falling tax revenues are mostly because of tax cuts, but also because of slow growth. Economic growth reduces revenue collection. Those two factors constitute 60% of the, what, from $4 trillion to $20 trillion, $16 trillion run-up in the debt. So the deficits and debt since 2000, at least $10 trillion is due to tax policies, $10 trillion. Another $2 to $3 trillion minimum is due to these endless wars in the Middle East, war spending. The rest of the deficits and debt are largely attributed to escalating medical costs that the government has to pay in its various programs, Medicaid, Medicare, CHIP for the kids, government employee, healthcare plans, and so forth, right? The price gouging. We've allowed these health insurance companies and the healthcare industry to gouge the hell out of us, including prescription drugs. They're at the forefront of this for years, for a decade and a half now. Well, that's not only hit consumer household budgets, but it's significantly hit the budgets of the federal government as well. So tax cuts, war spending, including Homeland Security, and the CIA and the NSA and all these crypto military. You know, we got an official military, but then we have this growing crypto military. You can't see it, but it's there. Special ops, you know, run by the CIA and all these other spook agencies in the U.S. now. Militarization of the U.S. society has been going on for decades now, and it's not stopping. You've got $3-4 trillion, maybe more, of the deficits and debt, to $16 trillion up to now, due to the tax cuts and slow growth, 60%, those two, and the rest has to do largely with the medical cost gouging, price gouging going on, and other programs. Okay. It's not Social Security. No, Social Security retirement's running a surplus. It's not Social Security. It's the medical side, yes, but not Social Security collects more tax revenue from the payroll tax than it actually pays out. And the government takes that surplus and steals it every year, puts a treasury bond that can't be spent in the Social Security trust fund and takes the real money and uses it for what? For tax cuts and war spending, mostly. Okay. Now, we're going to have another big element that's going to hit the deficit and debt that's coming up now with Trump. What's that other element? It's the interest on the debt, which has been running $200 to $300 billion a year, is now going to escalate as well. It's going to become a more important element. Why? Because the central bank, the Federal Reserve, is now going to, and the Treasury is now going to have to pay more for the bonds that it issues, that it sells, right? It's going to have to pay a higher interest. So the debt payment, the interest on that debt, the debt's rising another $10 trillion, at least, but the cost of that is going to rise. By the end of the 10-year period, and perhaps even much, much sooner, we're going to be paying $500 billion interest just on the debt because rates are rising now. You see, they've had a free rein as far as interest on the debt here with the Fed keeping these rates super low, you know, down there around 1% or less. Now it's going to rise rapidly as well. So now we've got even more massive tax cuts by Trump, not $1.5 trillion. I'll explain in a minute why it's more than $5 trillion in tax cuts, mostly for the corporations and the rich. Well, almost totally for corporations and the wealthy. That I've been saying up to now, and I'll give even more detailed analysis of that shortly. So we have we've had $16 trillion in tax cuts and more spending and other factors here under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to go up at least another $5 trillion in tax cuts. Well, you know, shouldn't be surprised, because during his election campaign, Trump was saying $5 trillion, $5.2 trillion. And then last year, about this time, he again said he wants $5 trillion. Well, he's getting $5 trillion. But, you know, the media is covering it all up. The media is certainly the Trump administration is trying to obfuscate it. And the media is going along with it. You know, lies and misrepresentation of facts have become the hallmark of U.S. politics in recent years more than ever. Right? Not just lies of commission by Trump and his crew, but lies of omission by the mainstream media as well. What do I mean? Okay. Trump's package of tax cuts for corporations, investors, and millionaires is claimed to total $1.5 trillion. But the amount is really more than $5 trillion, and maybe even higher. And another lie here, in his recent announcement of budget deficits, Trump has lowballed what the deficits are actually going to be, and therefore has lowballed the rise in the national debt that will occur. Then, of course, we have another lie from Trump here. For a year, he's been saying, a $1.5 trillion infrastructure spending plan, right? They promised during his election campaign and throughout last year, but it's only $200 billion from the federal government. You know, the rest is smoke and mirrors that has to be raised by private corporations and by local, state, and local government, which isn't going to happen. Right? You're not even going to get the $200 billion passed. All right, so forget the phony infrastructure, smoke and mirrors, Trump plan. That's not going to happen, I predict. Congress won't even pass that, right? But you got the mainstream media that doesn't really call him to task about these lies and misrepresentation. They, too, are echoing this claim of the tax cuts are only $1.5 trillion. Hmm? They provide no real analysis of the true total of the tax cuts, which I'm going to offer you here. They lowball the true impact of Trump's budget on the annual deficits of national debt, and they fail to expose the actual corporate subsidy nature of his smoke and mirrors infrastructure plan. So, you know, the mainstream media, they're either ignorant, don't know what's going on in terms of, you know, the real numbers here, or they're complicit. I don't know, either one. Okay. All right, so, excuse me, let's take the assumption, and my analysis of $5 trillion, And they just passed a $300 billion two-year spending bill, the majority of which is more than $80 billion a year increase in net increase in war spending, defense spending. Over $160 billion of that $300 billion is more war spending on top of what they had already in previous budgets. It's like we're fighting another war, right? It's like, you know, another Mideast war going on. Well, it is. It's preparation for Asia, for war in Asia, because the big cost part of this is the Navy. They're going to boost the Navy, and they're going to boost nuclear weapons preparation, right? They're looking at what they're going to have to do or planning to do here with North Korea and with China. That's what all this spending boost is about. Okay, so we got more war spending. And what did the Democrats get out of agreeing to this war spending in Congress? What did they get? Oh, they got a continuation of what they already had. They didn't get anything new. You know, they got a continuation of providing health insurance to CHIP program, which is fine. You know, I had nothing wrong with that. But they didn't get anything new. That's like workers sitting down with their union and negotiating with management and saying, okay, management, you can take away our health care as long as you leave our wages where they are. Like, don't cut our wages. Oh, we won. They didn't cut our wages. They raised the cost of our benefits, but they didn't cut our wages. Oh, great negotiation, right? That's called concession bargaining. That's been going on in industry for decades now. And what we got is the Democrats. Also, political concession bargaining. You can have two for you and none for us and one more for you and take away one from us and one more for you and none for us. That's what they're doing. I mean, the failure is really obvious with regard to this DACA, you know, the Dreamers. Oh, the Democrats said they were going to shut down the government. Oh, and then they blinked, right, and erased their line in the sand and said, oh, we're going to get it with the budget, you know, and then they blinked again, and what did we get? Oh, Nancy Pelosi stands up there and talks for 8 hours, makes it look like they're really trying to do something, right? They're totally inept, strategically and tactically bankrupt. They can't achieve anything anymore. Nothing's going to change, as I've been saying, till there's an independent party. Because these are just two wings of the corporate party of America here, Republicans and Democrats. All right, so enough on that topic. Let's get back to the economics. Back to the economics here. All right, so the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Why? Because the deficit and debt is getting bigger, and they know they got to borrow more. They know they got to borrow more, and to borrow more, they got to raise the rates to attract people, investors, global and U.S., to buy more bonds. That's why rates are going up. It's not because of inflation. It's not because of wages. It's because they know even massive deficits and debt are coming, and they got to borrow more, $1 trillion a year. And that's why they have to raise rates. Ah, but as I've been saying for some time, they won't be able to do it. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, if you look at what happened in 2007 and 2008, what precipitated the crash? Not caused it, but precipitated. It was the Federal Reserve raising benchmark rates over 5%. Right? That's what tripped it. That's what tripped the failure of all the subprime mortgage bonds. People couldn't pay for their homes because they were allowed to purchase homes at ridiculously low interest rates of 1% under Bush to keep the failing economy going in 2002 and 2003. So Greenspan, the Fed chairman, allowed rates to stay super low. That overheated the housing market. At the same time, the banks were issuing all kind of junk loans, you know, liar loans, 100% financing and so forth, just to create as many mortgages as they could, which they were then selling everywhere around the world, right? And all that was built upon inadequate income base. So when rates rose, people started returning the keys. They couldn't make the payments. And that precipitated the crisis. And because the crisis was really one of not just subprime mortgages and housing, it was a problem of derivatives and linking of all these forms of credit throughout the whole financial system. When the subprime mortgages crashed, it just dragged down everything else. But what precipitated the crash was raising these rates by the Fed to 5% or more. Well, the Fed's starting to raise rates again. But my argument is they will never get anywhere near 5% before they precipitate another crisis. Why is that? Well, that's because the economy is even weaker than it was in 2007. Households are up to their elbows in debt. They've been fueling consumer spending mostly by debt. The debt household debt level for you know, the median household debt level today is greater than it was in 2007. Corporate debt is greater than it was. Corporations borrowed and issued over $6 trillion in bonds, a lot of them junk bonds, since 2009. $6 trillion. More debt than ever before. And, of course, the government debt, you know, went from 4 to 20 trillion. So the debt run-up has continued and accelerated. They're more fragile. In my 2016 book, Systemic Fragility in a Global Economy, I created an explanation in detail of this and showed the growing fragility, meaning excess debt. And fragility means you don't, the debt goes so high and the cost of servicing it, principal and interest, is so great, you don't have an income stream that allows you to keep paying the principal and interest. And in fact, when you got a recession, even that inadequate income stream collapses. So now you got all this debt that doesn't go away and you don't have any income to pay for it. Well, that leads to defaults. And defaults lead to this psychological fear factor, which causes banks to freeze up. And of course, the collapsing defaults mean big losses for banks and financial institutions. And now we're on our way to, you know, the Great Recession. This is how the finance fragility in the financial system precipitates the crash and the correction. Doesn't cause it, but it precipitates it. And that's where we're headed once again. More debt than ever before. And once these bond prices and stock prices and other asset prices collapse, you're going to get a freeze-up of the system, the credit system. And the Fed raising interest rates, I've been predicting, cannot raise them more than 2.5% for the benchmark federal funds rate, which is at 1.5% now. Mm-hmm. If the Fed says it's going to have 4 increases this year, well, that's going to bring us up to 2.5%. Now we're at the precipice. Or another interest rate to watch is the 10-year Treasury bond, which is almost at 3%, just under. And I predict that cannot go, the long-run bond, cannot go more than 3.5% bond interest rate. So 2.5% federal funds rate, 3.5% bond interest rate, 10-year bond interest rate, then you're going to get a precipitation of a crash. That's nowhere near 5%. It won't take as much this time. That's why I don't believe the Fed, which knows this, is going to raise interest rates 4%. I don't think it's going to happen. But if they do, then they're in deep trouble, and the U.S. economy is in deep trouble. because consumers cannot sustain this. They've been sustaining consumption with debt and drawing down their savings, not with wage increases, which we talked about earlier. They can't sustain it. We're already seeing a weakening in the auto market and in the construction markets, right? And this will spill over soon into other areas, service areas of the economy. Government is increasing spending, but only on defense. That doesn't generate a lot of jobs and income anymore. And they're cutting back of spending elsewhere. And these big deficits are purposely created so Paul Ryan and his buddies can go after Social Security and Medicare and all the other, quote, entitlements, education, transport, and all the rest, right? It's all what they call starving the beast. They've been talking about since Reagan, and they've been doing it, which is to cause massive deficits and use that hammer to go after social programs. And that's what's happening, because now we got the massive accelerating deficits because of the tax cuts, Trump tax cuts, and because of Trump defense spending run-up, right? And because of Fed rate rising and interest on the debt, and because of prescription drug and insurance companies continuing to gouge everybody. That's why we have all these huge deficits. And that's why we have now looking at trillion-dollar a year deficits as far as the eye can see. Anyway, remember, I said 2.5% on the federal funds benchmark rate, 3.5% on the 10-year bond. If the rates go any higher, you know, run for the hills, because you're going to precipitate another credit crisis and another recession as a result. I predict this likely will occur in 2019. All right, that's my prediction. Recession, 2019, providing that the Fed continues to raise interest rates 4%. That's what's going to happen. All right, so I've been saying $5 trillion in tax cuts, not $1.5 trillion. Let me explain that, all right? And the mainstream media is complicit in this cover-up. They say only $1.5 trillion in tax cuts, right? Well, $1.5 trillion, that figure is the figure that they say will be the deficit impact of the tax cuts. But even that estimate of the deficit impact is grossly underestimated, at least by half, which I'll also explain shortly. Okay, here's the true value of the business investor tax cuts under Trump. Take your pencil out. $1.5 trillion reduction in corporate taxes by lowering the nominal tax rate from 35% to 21%. That's $1.5 trillion. Another $300 billion, which goes to non-corporate businesses, and that's a minimum, as a result of the 20% tax deduction, that the new 20% more tax deduction that non-corporate businesses, i.e. proprietorships, partnerships, will get. Now, that will lower their effective tax rate from 37% to 29.6%. So non-corporate businesses get a nice big cake for free in the tax cut, as well as corporate businesses. Now, another $300 billion more for ending the business mandate under the Affordable Care Act. They stuck that in here, you know, another knife in the back of the ACA, and they're going to continue put these poison pills in the legislation going forward, more and more individual poison pills, giving the Affordable Care Act the deep six. That's the strategy now. They couldn't repeal the whole thing, so they're going to do it piecemeal with poison pills that they inject into different legislation. And they've done that here with the tax cuts and $300 billion for ending the business mandate, $300 billion for the pass-through corporate, non-corporate business 20% deduction. Okay, another $500 billion for accelerated business depreciation write-offs. That's a form of tax cut too. Right? Now businesses can buy all the equipment they want, not just small business, but any business, in the year they purchased it, and write off the full amount. Small business, very small business, has already had this benefit. It's called Section 179 of the tax code. But now all of them get it. Buy as much stuff as you want and deduct it from your taxes. Plus, there's a repeal of the corporate alternative minimum tax and a halving, cutting in half of the AMT alternative minimum tax for individuals, and then also a big deduction in the amount of the estate tax for the rich. You know, they're the investors. So when you cut personal income taxes with the AMT and estate tax for the very rich, you're giving investors a big boost here. So when you talk about the capitalist class benefiting from the tax cut, you just can't talk about corporations. You got to talk about non-corporate businesses, and you got to talk about investors, you see. So if you add up just these four items, right, that I've talked about, we already have $1.5 trillion plus $500 billion more for the pass-through non-corporate business, $300 billion more for businesses for the Affordable Care Act, right? That's $2.1 trillion, and another half a trillion for the combined business accelerated write-offs and changes in the AMTs and estate tax. And then also the tax rates for the individual income tax on the very wealthy has been significantly reduced as well. Again, they're the investor tax. The very top bracket gets reduced from 39.6% tax nominal rate to 37%. However, this 39.6 to 37, right, the 37, the new high, does not take effect until they reach even more income. Before it was $426,000 a year. Now it's 37% does not start until they reach $600,000 income a year. Right? That adds probably another $300 billion to $500 billion over the course of the decade to the tax cuts for the very rich. So that's at minimum, a total of $3 trillion so far in tax cuts under the Trump plan for corporate, non-corporate, and investors. Oh, but we haven't even talked about the real biggie here yet. And what's that? That's multinational corporations. Their take will be at least another $2 trillion in tax reduction over the next decade. Well, how do we get to that calculation? The following. Multinational corporations, U.S., have reportedly hoarded between $2 trillion and $2.7 trillion, depending on the source, of cash in their offshore subsidiaries in order to avoid paying taxes on their earnings offshore. But you see, it's not just actual earnings offshore. They have diverted their earnings onshore in the U.S. to their offshore subsidiaries by manipulating intracompany pricing. Okay, so it's not just offshore, but it's onshore. But anyway, they admit $2 to $2.7 trillion. But that is an underestimated number, that $2 to $2.7 trillion. First of all, it's a figure for only the 500 largest U.S. multinational corporations. What about the thousands and tens of thousands of other U.S. corporations that have foreign subsidiaries in which they've been parking their cash to avoid taxation? By the way, this ability to not pay on their foreign earnings, their foreign cash, was given to them by Bill Clinton and the Democrats in 1997. Yeah, they're the ones who said, when you do your tax returns, Mr. Multinational Corporation, just check this box that says you're not going to calculate your foreign earnings and your taxes, and we'll leave it at that. Yeah, Bill Clinton. Thank you, Bill. Right? He did it. Well, of course, they were going after his butt there, weren't they, with all of his shenanigans going on, and they were trying to impeach him. So Bill was going to do anything he could to placate them. So, you know, he would not get the deep six impeachment. All right. So that's just an aside to keep in mind here. You know, the 2.7, they don't calculate except for the 500 largest U.S. multinationals. And there's tens of thousands of other U.S. corporations that have stuffed it in foreign subsidiaries. And none of that even counts what they're all hoarding in their offshore tax havens in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, Vanuatu, and elsewhere. We don't even know how much that is. That should add to the $2.7 trillion. Another reason to doubt the $2 trillion figure reported is accurate is that it was reported they already had $2 trillion stuffed away offshore back in 2011. Yeah, according to the business periodical Financial Times, the largest U.S. corporations, in January 2012 article, quote, are collectively sitting on an estimated U.S. $2 trillion of cash, unquote. That's the Financial Times, business periodical, global business periodical. Well, do you believe that they stopped diverting profits and cash offshore after 2011-12? That they haven't added to that for the past 5 years? Well, that's another reason why the number is much larger than $2 trillion. Conservatively, they've got at least $4 trillion in cash stuffed offshore to avoid taxes. $4 trillion. Now, under the Trump tax bill, instead of paying 35%, which they never paid, they can bring it back and pay only a 10%. Not 35%, 10%. 1 year here, the repatriation provisions of the Trump tax bill, right? Well, if they have $4 trillion offshore and they should have paid 35%, that would be $1.4 trillion that they should be paying. But they're only, according to the Trump estimates, going to pay $339 billion by bringing that money back. So they're going to save over $1 trillion just in the first year. Thereafter, for the next 9 years, they will pay only 8 to 15% instead of 35%. That's at least another $1 trillion in tax savings from U.S. multinationals under the Trump tax plan. Right? All right. So in short, the multinational corporations will get a tax reduction of $2 trillion on top of the $3 trillion we've already calculated here. For those four reasons, the corporate tax rate, the pass-through rate, estate tax, AMT deals, and ACA, and accelerated depreciation write-offs, right? And reducing their top individual income tax rates from 39 to 37 and higher threshold, et cetera, right? That was all $3 trillion. And then you add $2 trillion for the multinationals, and there's your $5 trillion. Now, how do they get to $1.5 trillion? Well, they get to $1.5 trillion by raising taxes on the middle class, $2 trillion. Okay, so it's a $5 trillion cut for the rich and their businesses, and a $2 trillion increase on the middle class by limiting deductions and so forth. Right? So that leaves a $3 trillion difference, isn't it? $5 trillion minus $2 trillion tax hikes leaves you $3 trillion. Well, they're saying it's only $1.5 trillion. Well, how did they get from $3 trillion actual deficit to $1.5 trillion? Well, with absurd, ridiculous assumptions about U.S. growth, that we're going to have growth rates 3 to 4% every year for the next 10 years without exception. That's over twice the growth rate of the past decade. We're going to grow over twice as fast, right? And slowing long-term trends in U.S. productivity and labor force growth will somehow immediately reverse themselves now and accelerate. And we're going to grow at a double annual rate, right? And there will be no recession for another 10 years, when it's clear historically there's a recession 7 to 9 years after recovery. And we're already in the eighth year of that. If there's a recession, then the U.S. economy will have to grow at 5% a year, a figure never before attained, in order to get the deficit down to $1.5 trillion. Won't happen, folks. Won't happen. The $1.5 trillion is less than a half of what the deficits will actually be because of the Trump tax cuts. Less than half, right? Gross misrepresentation, lies, and they're not called on it by the mainstream media. So, net result, these $5 trillion in tax cuts are really going to be about $3 trillion or more in actual deficits going forward, probably more. And then we have rising defense spending and continue gouging by the healthcare and drug industries, and rising interest on the debt the Fed is going to have to now pay. And because of the rising debt and interest, the Fed has to raise interest rates to attract the financing to pay to cover the debt, right? Maybe even more than it plans because there are signals that foreign countries aren't going to buy as much treasury bonds. So they're going to have to raise it even more. And therefore, interest on the debt as a factor in the deficits and debt is going to rise. And that brings us back to this scenario of a possible recession in 2019 and precipitated. If we have four more rate increases, it will be precipitated. But the rate increases and the precipitation of the recession can be traced back to these massive deficits and debt that have been occurring ever since 2000 under George Bush. And the causes of those deficits and debt, which are attributed largely to massive historic first in tax cuts for corporations, businesses, and investors. Massive going on at a time that we are escalating defense and war spending, at a time when the healthcare industry and drug industry has us hostage and are gouging everybody, right? And now the rising interest on the debt that's going to occur. That's the formula. That's why we're in a crisis mode here. And this thing is going to break 2019, 2020 at the worst. And anyway, that's my analysis. That's my scenario of 2019. And Trump, that's why it's Trump recession. You know, I wrote an article, read this, jackrasmus.com on my blog, or read some of the other public blogs where I presented this analysis in more detail, right? And the article is entitled Trump's Tax Cut, Trump's Budget, Trump's Deficit, Trump's Recession 2019. Okay, that's my analysis of where we're going here with fiscal monetary policy. They're painting themselves in a deeper corner over and over here with monetary policy and fiscal policy because they are bent on subsidizing their capitalists, their corporations, their businesses, their investors. That's what it's all about. It's not about trying to grow the economy and balance the economy, keep it from recessions. No, this policy in the 21st century is subsidized corporate capital incomes.